All right, thank you everyone. Welcome to our System Center Configuration Manager session entitled Why is Everyone Using System Center Configuration Manager? I'm Colin Smith. I'm going to be your host for the session. I've got some assistants in the chat who will also have mics that can help out. But for now, everyone's been muted. If you'd like to ask a question during the session, please ask it in the chat. If you'd like to have a dialogue-based question, we can do that at the end with microphones. Just want to minimize the background noise for everybody listening. Also, if you don't get an answer to your question right away in the chat, don't worry about it. We will batch some of them and ask them at the end, but we want to respect everyone's time so that those that need to be somewhere, we're going to try to wrap up the presentation by just about 11 o'clock and then save the rest of the time for Q&A. So I had some questions on the screen. Just to get your minds going, why do organizations care about Configuration Manager, without talking about the technology specifically, but talking about the types of things that they can do? These are the types of things that organizations are using Configuration Manager for. Managing new server and client operating systems. We've seen a lot of excitement around Windows 10. A lot of organizations, after being stuck on Windows XP for a long time, didn't want to get into the pattern where they had old OSs. They wanted to be more current and upgrade operating systems more frequently so they wouldn't have the same kinds of issues they had with their massive Windows 7 migrations. Also, managing applications, understanding who's using what so that you can plan for future purchases and licensing, and of course, mobile device management is becoming very popular. So we'll be covering all of that. I've been using this product in one form or another for over 20 years. For a time, I was a technical product lead for what at the time was called SMS for Canada. For Microsoft, the product has gone through many names. I'll talk about that in the next few slides. But I've been working with this product and this suite of products for over two decades now, and I've seen different incarnations and the different evolutions of the product. I've got a lot of war stories, real-world experiences that I'd like to share with you. I'm also currently an MVP, it's a recognition from Microsoft, for this product and the suite, as well as for device management and enterprise devices. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you a quick overview of System Center Configuration Manager. Then we're going to go into some of the major functionality, such as inventory management, software distribution, operating system deployment, compliance management, endpoint protection, and mobile device management. Before we jump in, what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump to one of my demos just because it's a little bit long to get it started. We'll be talking about operating system deployment a little bit later, but I kicked one off a little earlier. So I just want to share that with you. You should be able to see it. So what this is a system that was Pixie booted. So it was basically a brand new system, had no OS, and we booted it to this point and paused it here just so you could see it. This is what... Again, you don't have to have this paused here, but we had it paused just so we could have it for demonstration purposes ready for you to see. And I'll talk more about what's happening here, but I wanted you to see that I've got nothing up my sleeves, and it's all really happening. It's not a video or fake in any way. It's running on a VM. I'm just going to click Next, and what I'm going to see is that there are two different operating systems that we have available in our environment for that device. I could make one of them mandatory, or I could have a longer list if we had different builds or different things we want to do. So I'm just going to choose one. I'm going to choose Windows 10. I'm going to click Next, and this is going to kick off. And we'll keep coming back and checking on this every now and then. It takes about 15 minutes in our lab to do this. But you'll notice it's formatting the disk, etc. And we'll come back and check in on that a little later. Okay, back to the slide deck. So you may have heard this product called different things. Some people call it SCCM. I've called it SMS previously today. It's had many, many different names throughout the years. It started off as SMS when it was released. Before it was SMS, it was MMS as was its code name. It's gone through many incarnations. So I'll give you a little bit of legal advice. If you want to look for information on this product and you want to get Microsoft specific results in your Google searches or your Bing searches, do not type in SCCM. The reason for that is that the Society of Critical Care Medicine has trademarked SCCM. So Microsoft is not allowed to use SCCM in their documentation, although many people outside of Microsoft continue to do that. So the official name is System Center Configuration Manager, and on this slide I've got year month, because they're now using the release date as part of the name, and we'll be talking about Configuration Manager as a service in a little while. We're really talking about the baseline product here, Configuration Manager 2012, and the new versions that are 15.11 and 16.02 that we're going to be looking at today. And they're tightly integrated with other Microsoft technologies, and that's why currently well over 70% of domain joined PCs in the world have a Configuration Manager license associated with them. They may or may not be deployed, but they exist. So for a lot of organizations I deal with, they've already bought the licenses, they've been sitting on a shelf for a while, they've never deployed it, or they've deployed it but they're not taking full advantage of it. And as they evolve their IT offerings, they start to take advantage of more and more of the features within the Microsoft stack, and I've got some of those listed here. And Configuration Manager plays very nicely with all of those. There's very, very tight integration. So what are the major features? Well, hardware and software inventory, and I'll be showing you some demos on that. But in addition to just telling you what you've got in the environment, we can distribute software to devices within the environment. We can then tell you who's using that software. We can manage baselines within the environment from a security perspective or a configuration perspective. We can patch devices. We can deploy operating systems, and as you saw earlier, we kicked off an operating system deployment, and I'll get into that in more detail in a few minutes. We can get rich reports for all levels within the organization, whether it be a sysadmin or a CIO, information that can make their jobs easier based on the types of information they require. I'll talk a little bit about endpoint protection and a little bit about network access controls. And since 2012, there's been some major changes in the product. Self-service, which I'll show you a little bit about. It's much more user-centric. The other thing that's really interesting is all the different types of devices that can now be managed with Configuration Manager. And I'll show you some of that as well. As I go through this session, I'll be talking about a lot of the functionality within Configuration Manager. But there'll be some terms that may be new for you or maybe used in a way you're not used to hearing them. So I thought I'd give you a little bit of a language background. I'll be talking about collections. Collections are targets for actions within Configuration Manager, whether that's an operating system deployment, a software deployment, a report, a baseline for compliance management. I'm going to create collections. Now, collections can be based on devices or users. So I can have user collections, I can have device collections, but I can't have a collection that has both mixed. And for good reason. In previous versions of the product, you could do that, and then you get very, very strange things happening when you try to deploy software to a user that doesn't have the proper device to accept that software. So that's a fairly new concept for a lot of people. And then we'll be talking about discovery methods, and that's how we find out about the environment that we're managing. Just so you know, scalability is not really an issue with Configuration Manager. It can support over 100,000 clients in one site in hierarchy, up to 175,000 depending on what version you're using. But there are very, very few organizations that have more devices than one Configuration Manager hierarchy can support. What does it look like when you deploy it? It can be very complex. You can have all sorts of devices performing different roles, working together, distributed across a worldwide organization. But for most people, they have it down to one server that has all the roles, manages their mobile devices, their laptops, their desktops, and their servers. So it can be as simple or as complex as you need it to be based on how simple or complex your network topology and your business requirements are. Big changes for people that have used previous versions of the product. You can do a lot more management with a lot less infrastructure. In the past, we have had to have lots of site servers communicating with each other, spread out across large environments in order to manage them. Now we can do a lot more with a lot less. Like I said, we've got organizations with over 100,000 devices being managed from a single site. And Since I talked about 2012, we talked about the new model. As you're well aware, Windows 10 is now Windows as a Service, and Microsoft continues to upgrade it and add new features. So in order to keep pace with that, in order to manage those devices, and as they're a moving target, Configuration Manager had to adapt. So now we've got a new model where Configuration Manager gets new features in much the same way that Windows does, and I'll show you that in one of my demos as well. So it's called Configuration Manager as a Service. Some of the new features since 1511, so that would have been November of last year, that I'm excited about are here in yellow on this slide. So now we can get up to 175,000 clients in a primary site. We have support for the Windows 10 upgrade, which is a very fast, efficient way to upgrade devices to Windows 10. More support for universal programs, and Windows PE Peer Cache, which is great for organizations that have remote offices that they want to do operating system upgrades on. There are some new features added this year as well in the February build. I'm not going to spend too much time on these slides. I really want to jump into the product and give you a feel for that. And one of the other things, and we'll be doing another seminar on this in the near future, is Windows 10 servicing branches. So I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with that or not, but we have different builds of Windows for different user scenarios. So there's the insider build, which is typically targeted at leading edge or hobbyists. Typically not something you're going to want to run in production in your business. We've got the current branch, which is really targeted at consumers. We have current branch for business, which is what most organizations will use, and then a long-term servicing branch. And they've all got different requirements from a patching perspective. Just want to make you aware that if you are deploying Windows 10 in your environment and you are using multiple servicing branches, the new versions of Configuration Manager are ready to handle that. And we do that through the in-console upgrades, where new versions of the product become available and you don't have to actually go through any investigation to find out when they're available and how to upgrade. They're available in console, and I'll show you that in more detail later. Let's talk about how we get devices managed. Right? We have to put agents on the devices we manage for the most part if we want to have the richest experience. There are a small subset of devices that we can manage without agents, but for the most part, we're going to want to put an agent on there. One of the most interesting new features in the product is the ability to control agents at the collection level. So let me show you what I mean by that. I'm going to switch over to my Configuration Manager console. And you'll notice the console, for those of you who've never seen it before, is a lot like many Microsoft consoles. It's got that Outlook feel where you've got a navigation pane here, you've got a workspace slider here, and a results pane here, as well as a ribbon. So I'm going to go into administration and look at client settings, and I'm going to show you all the different settings that we can manage for the agents. So whether they connect to cloud services, whether they have endpoint protection, which is Microsoft's anti-malware tool installed, how often we collect different types of inventory, whether they're allowed to be controlled remotely, whether we meter the software they're using, hardware inventory. There's all sorts of configuration items here that we can manage. But we don't have to set these site-wide. What I mean by that is I can choose a subset of machines to have specific client settings. So perhaps my laptops, which may not always be connected to my corporate LAN, will have one set of settings. Perhaps some of my servers in my data center will have a different requirement, or machines in a DMZ would have another requirement. So we can choose them, and then we can deploy them to collections. We can also layer them, so we could have a baseline, for instance, that every one of my organizations gets these basic settings, and then we deploy other more specialized settings. One thing I didn't talk about is how we get those agents out there. And we've got quite a few ways. The most common are push, so right from the console. I can look at discovered assets in the organization, push agents to it. If you're using WSUS or some other patching tool, we could do it that way. Or we can do it through scripts and GPO. Another big change is administrative segmentation. So Microsoft has really been on a big, big kick to segregate and create role-based administrative controls. So how that works in Configuration Manager is we have a concept of security scopes. And again, we use collections and roles. So a role could be someone who's allowed to distribute software, but not take remote control of a device. So we could have a software manager. We could have a help desk role. We could have a full administrator role. And each of those roles can be scoped to a subset of devices and users within the environment. So if I've got an office in Victoria, for instance, and I want to give the sysadmin there full access to all the machines in Victoria, but not to my devices in Montreal, I could do that. Or I could set it up so I've got a software manager who can update software across the country but can't do anything else. So I can slice and dice it any way that makes sense for my organization. So inventory management. What do I have in my environment, both from my hardware and a software perspective? So as you saw in the client agent settings, we're able to choose what we collect from an inventory perspective. So hardware inventory is based on WMI, and software inventory is based on file headers, and you can choose where we look on the device, right? So typically you'd look at program files or program files x86, and you can then fine-tune where you look for software. You could look at the entire drive if you prefer, but that may not give you the results you're looking for. It depends on your use case. You can also speed things up. So I have a note here. ARP is considered hardware. What does that mean? So ARP is what is add remove programs. So those of you that are familiar with the add remove programs in Control Panel or on my computer, that list of software is in the registry. That's a view into the registry. I can give you a quick peek at that. When you look at programs and features, we can see the software that's installed. All of this, though, is not part of what we call software inventory because it's done through a WMI query. It's stored in the registry. So sometimes we get organizations a little confused. I'm doing software inventory, but it's not matching up with what I see in my add remove programs. Or I'm doing hardware inventory and software is coming up. And that's the reason. So people get confused about that, and they're slightly different. Just wanted to make sure that if you're looking at doing that, you understand the difference there. So let's take a look at inventory management. Before we do that, let's check in on our OSD. It's done. We didn't get to see it. So that machine is now a Windows 10 machine. That was a lot quicker than I expected. All right, let's go into inventory management. So remember I talked about collections, right? So I've got user collections here. I've got device collections. So here's some built-in user collections and some that I created. Here's some device collections. I'm just going to pick a collection I created that's got very few machines in it and show you what's available if I navigate this through Resource Explorer. You typically wouldn't do that. This is great for looking at one machine, but if you want to look at things en masse, you'll want to do that through reporting or through other kinds of queries, and I'll show that a little bit later. So here's the type of hardware information that we get. More detail if you want, motherboard information. So all of this is available through WMI. And we can fine-tune this in those client agent settings that I showed you previously. I also have the ability to look at software that's installed. So that's software that's installed on that device. And we go take a look at that device in a few minutes and show you some things when we do the software distribution piece. So in addition to knowing what hardware and software is installed on a machine, we can also meter the software usage. The nice thing about this is if you've got software that's not used by everyone, I'll give you an example, maybe Visio or Project or some graphics application that isn't necessarily used by everyone in your organization, or if you've got overlapping software that in some cases you've got more than one product that can do the same thing, understanding who's actually using the software that's deployed in the organization can be very useful. So there was a question in the chat about improvements in reporting capabilities. So this is one of the improvements in that we can get very detailed reports as to who's using what software and over what time period. Now be careful with software metering. If you just turn it on and run it for a day, you'll find out very little because by default the data comes back every 7 days. So you need to leave it running for at least 7 days, but I would argue you want to leave it running for over a month, because there's software that doesn't get used on a daily basis or even a weekly basis if you want to start getting a feel for what's really being used in your environment. So you'll at least get 4 update cycles reported back over time. But this is great for renegotiating license agreements with vendors. If you've bought 100 copies of something and it's time to pay the maintenance and you've only got 65 users that actively use it, you may be able to lower your software licensing costs. Not going to suggest that you run this on servers, by the way, although you could. There is some, you know, there is a little bit of additional overhead, and you know, especially if you had something like a Citrix server, terminal server, you're going to get a lot of data that's going to be very difficult to actually understand. Okay, so this is one of the highlights of the product. Software distribution. How do we get software to the devices that we're managing? And there's a couple of different ways to do it. There's a lot of infrastructure that goes into it behind the scenes. I'm going to simplify it and tell you there's really two ways we can do it. We can either distribute software to a device or distribute software to a user. And that can get confusing, but I'll explain some of that. So if we deploy software to a device, we target the device by name, and that device gets the software. And I'll show you a quick demo of that in a minute. If I deploy software to a user, how do I know what device it's going to go onto? Well, we have something called a deployment type. And what we do with that is we determine whether it's the user's primary device or not that we want to target. We may want them to have that software on every device they touch. We may only want them to have it on primary device, or we may want them to have a different version of the software depending on what type of device it is. And I'll give you an example of that. If somebody's got a smartphone as well as a desktop computer, and we want to deploy Microsoft Word to them. Well, there is an iOS version of Word, there's an Android version of Word, there's a Windows Phone version of Word, and there's a Win32 version of Word. So to their desktop, we could deploy Word 2013 or 2016, but to their smartphone, we could deploy the iOS version if they've got an iPhone, as an example. So that's where targeting users becomes a little bit more interesting than just targeting a device. And it can happen dynamically based on when the user chooses to accept that software deployment. And we use something called distribution points to bring the software closer to the users. So if you've got 2 large offices or 3 large offices, you may want to put a distribution point in each office to host those source files. The other option is we can use branch cache, so that the first user that accepts the software install becomes the seed for other users to install the software. I'm going to show you a quick demo of that. It's actually very slick from an end user perspective. So I'm going to jump to a client machine. This is a Windows 8.1 client machine. And there's 2 things here. This is the software center. In some environments, the user may never see it. In other environments, you may want them to. I've set it up so that they can see available software, and it doesn't have a deadline on it. I haven't made it mandatory. So this is software that's available here. This was targeted at the device. So just for fun, I've got everybody see that? I've got a file folder here full of log files. I'll highlight a bunch of them, right click. It doesn't give me a lot of options except maybe to scan with endpoint protection. Notice there's no 7-zip there. Okay. If I go into this, you see that I've got some software available to me. I can choose to install it by clicking install. If my administrator had wanted to make this mandatory, they could have put a deadline after which time it installs automatically. Okay. So I'm going to click install. And you notice it jumps to installation status. It's installing. And now I have the option to uninstall it. It shows up as installed software. It no longer shows up as available. And if I go back to my folder here and select a bunch of files, you'll notice I now have 7-zip. Okay. So that's one way of doing that. The other way is if my administrator wanted to create a software catalog where I can go and choose software. Now, this is based on user-based software distribution. The previous demo was for software targeted at a device. Here, I'm logged in. It tells me, it knows who I am, and it knows what software is targeted at me. And notice I've got two products here. One is FileZilla, and it says requires approval, no, which means I can just click install right away, it would install. But if I wanted to install Office 64-bit, it says it requires an approval, and I have to request it. So I can do that, and the request will go into a queue. Why do I need a 64-bit version of Office? I put in my justification, and it goes into an approval. So this is what the end user sees. But how do you set all that up from an administrative perspective? Let me show you that. So we go into our software library and configuration manager, and notice I have a group of applications. Let's take a look at the Office application here, and you can see how we've set it up. We've got information about it, how it looks in the application catalog, any dependencies, does it require any other applications to be installed first, and it will automatically get those and get them for me, distribution settings, you know, how much bandwidth do I want to use for that, and this is where I talked about deployment types, where I could do a different deployment type for a different type of device, and then here I can look at the deployments. I've deployed that to all users and made it available. If I go back and I look at 7-Zip, you notice the deployment is, where'd it go? It's to all devices. It's available and it is set to a specific collection of devices. So how hard is it to deploy software? Well, once we've got the package, it's actually very simple. I could right click or I could use the ribbon. I could click deploy. I choose a collection. So this is where I choose whether I'm going to go to a user collection or a device collection. So I'll choose modern app users, since it's a modern app, that's a collection I made just for this scenario. I can add some comments in there. Notice we talked about dependencies, so if your application has other prerequisites, we can automatically include those. It's going to move it to a distribution point for me to bring the source files close to the end users. Now this is where I choose whether I want to install it, whether I want to make it available or required. Remember I talked about forcing the user to install the software, and whether it requires an administrative approval. Okay, let me make this required. Now I can pre-deploy the software to the user's primary device. What does that mean? It means if I want to make it mandatory on the 15th of May, I can start moving the bits out in a low bandwidth way, starting, let's say, on the 10th. And that way, when it comes time on the 15th for them to install it, they don't have to pull it across the network. Send wake-up packets. If we're supporting wake on LAN, I can wake up the machine at a specified time, maybe 3 in the morning, and install the software at that time. And what do you do with clients that are on perhaps a tethered connection to a cell phone or a VPN? Maybe we'll allow them to miss the deadline until they come back into the office. So I'll click that and move ahead. So, when do I want the application to be available? Make it available right now, but I'm going to make the deadline, like I said, sometime in the future, May 15th. And what does the user see? Any alerts? Here's my summary. Next. And it's deployed. And that'll show up for the users. So that's how we set up those two types of deployments that we saw on the client side. Software updates, something people struggle with a lot. You know, they talk about things like the Configure virus and variants of that still infecting machines because people aren't patching, and the patches have been available for over 5 years. Organizations take patching seriously are always looking for new ways to do things that are more efficient. So WSUS is from Microsoft. It's free. Configuration Manager relies on the WSUS catalog, so Microsoft didn't reinvent anything. You don't get better access to patches if you're using Configuration Manager. It's the exact same service through Windows Update. We use the same technology on the desktops as well, with the Windows Update agent. But what we do is we take advantage of the additional infrastructure that Configuration Manager gives us. So the ability to use distribution points or branch cache to move patches closer to the end users, so there's less impact on the network. A lot richer scheduling, as you saw. Integration with really rich reporting, which I'll show you in a few minutes. And the ability to do third-party non-Microsoft patches as well. And then building those into a health check. That's a big improvement on WSUS, but the most important improvement is what we called automated deployment rules, or ADRs. An example is all patches that came out in the last month with severity critical for Windows 7 can go to my classroom PCs. And I set up that logic once and it runs every month. So I don't have to go back in the console and reset and redo that every month when there's new patches. I pretty much go through the same sequence every time. Now I can go in and do some ad hoc patching as well, but this is an example of something that you might do on a regular basis. And I'll show you that very quickly. You'll notice in my software library, I've got something here called software updates. And I can look at all of the updates here. These are the same updates you'd see in WSUS, or the same updates that are available when you go to Windows Update on your device. And I can manage them. I can manage which ones we care about for our organization. I can create update groups. So I can create updates for Windows 10 devices, updates for Windows 7 devices, updates for my servers, etc. I can create deployment packages to move the updates throughout my environment to my staging areas called distribution points. And then I've got my automatic deployment rules. So here's an example of one that we created. Here's the rule I created. So basically, it's all patches available in the last month for Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 or Windows Server 2012 R2 that are critical updates or security updates. And I'm just going to set this on a schedule to run. Maybe I'll run it Wednesday after Patch Tuesday and deploy it to a subgroup of machines. What I could do is I could have two automatic deployment rules, one that goes to my pilot group a day after the patch is available, and then one that goes 2 weeks later to the rest of my environment, as an example, unless somebody decides to pause it and not allow it to go because there were some issues in the pilot group. Okay, so some very rich automation for patching and some very rich compliance reporting. So we'll typically see when we look at compliance reporting for patches is we'll see four colors potentially in the pie chart. This one has three. Green is compliant, which is usually a good thing. So compliant means it needed the patch and it has it. Red, non-compliant, means it needs the patch, it doesn't have it. So an example of needing it and it would be if it's a, let's say it's a Windows 7 patch, but the machine is running Windows 8.1 or Windows 10, well then it doesn't need it. So that would be a neither compliant nor non-compliant. It would just be an out of scope, and those would show up as blue if I had any in my pie chart. And then unknown. Why do we have a bunch of unknowns? The unknowns come from machines that haven't reported back in the time period since I made this patch available. So if I make the patch available at noon on a Friday and they haven't checked in and reported back to me, maybe it's a laptop that's not on my network for the day, they come back as gray. Over time, that gray area should get smaller. So we talked about operating system deployment at the beginning. I didn't realize how quick our environment was, but we were able to deploy a Windows 10 image in about 10 minutes. So for those of you that do operating system deployments on a regular basis, you're probably familiar with something called a Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, or MDT. It uses the same technology, we use the same images, we use the same concept of driver packages and task sequences. What we add to the equation with Configuration Manager is the ability to use the distribution points, which are, again, as I said, designed to bring source files close to end users and schedule when they get moved across. We can move the operating system image at night, get it to another city, get it near an end user. Any of the software that you saw in the software library can be linked into the task sequence so that when I'm deploying Windows 10, I can also deploy the software using the same task sequence. does true zero touch. I can schedule a machine to do wake on LAN at 3 in the morning and get a new operating system by the time the user gets in at 9 a.m. with all their applications intact, without any human touch at all. Also supports multicast. What that means is, rather than if I had 20 machines all being upgraded at the same time, rather than copying the files across the network 20 times, I broadcast them on a special IP address, and those 20 machines listen in, and I only have to broadcast it once. And there's two ways I can do that. I can have it a scheduled broadcast or a repeating broadcast. So scheduled broadcast is you wake them all up, let's say, for 10 p.m., and at 10:15, I start multicasting, and they're ready for it. Or I have a repeating broadcast where I'm broadcasting the operating system deployment, and as soon as I'm finished one stream, I start another. So as machines come online, they start listening in. So a machine that only got half the stream the first time, let's say it got the second half of the stream, it just waits until the broadcast starts again, and then it picks up the first half of that stream, and then it does its operating system upgrade. Some very interesting use cases that you can manage for that is if you wanted to do en masse operating system upgrades across the country or across the globe. Supports for Windows 10 upgrade and supports for USMT, which allows you to preserve the user's files and state, their profile settings, all of that. And we can either copy that off the device if we want to wipe it and then lay them back down. So you may want to reformat the hard drive or something like that as part of your operating system upgrade, and there's reasons to do that sometimes. Or if you want to speed things up, we can just park the data on the drive, get pointers to where it all is, and then re-inject those into the new OS, and that's a quicker way of doing it as well. So I'm back into here, back into my software library. You notice I have operating systems, right? So I can manage drivers for different devices. So I could have Dells, HPs, Lenovos, Microsoft Surfaces, manage all the drivers here, create specific driver packages for different models in my environment. I can have different operating system images or upgrade packages if I need them. In this case, I don't have them in there. I have different boot images, whether I've got 64 or 32-bit devices. But the most important part, that is the task sequence. So a task sequence is just a series of, as the name implies, a series of tasks that we're going to perform on a device. So I can choose what operating systems it runs on, for instance. You see all the different tasks that you would go through. I can customize each of these, partitioning the drive, talking to the firmware if I need to, applying BitLocker, applying the operating system, applying Windows settings, etc. What's very cool is MDT task sequences. So if you're used to using MDT, these are all of the different types of things that we can do, and they're all done for us, all wizard-based. I can set all of these up, just give it a name, and integrate them in here. So I can join a domain as part of it. I can add software as part of the package. I can add specific drivers, but everything that we're used to seeing in MDT is available here. We can also do this one here, which is a bare metal. That's the one that we were doing to the blank system before. So we can take a machine that's got no OS, boot it, and have it grab an OS. Remember we talked about Windows 10 servicing? We've also got that in there as well. Let's move on. We're getting near the end of our time. I want to talk about configuration settings. So this is a functionality where you can set a baseline and be alerted to the drift from the baseline. It's great for security and other configuration settings. We also have the ability to remediate that. So let me show you really quickly how that works. If I go into Assets and Compliance, this is where I have compliance settings. So a baseline is created by including a bunch of configuration items. So configuration items are individual settings. So here's an example of one here. BitLocker setting. So here we have a verify compliance, BitLocker, must equal 1, that means that it's deployed. I have it here set to not remediate, meaning I just want to be notified if a machine doesn't have BitLocker. I'm not going to enforce BitLocker. And the reason you wouldn't want to do that is that that can be very drive intensive. If somebody's going to a meeting, a presentation, and we start encrypting their hard drive on them, they may not have the best user experience. If I want to create a configuration item, I'll show you what that looks like. And I'll sort of whet your appetite for a few things that are coming up in future demos. So notice I can do different operating systems here. If I choose this, I can even choose iOS or macOS, Android. If I click this, here we go. So notice I have all sorts of settings that I can choose. Password settings, email management, browser, Internet Explorer, you know, whether we allow the device to roam or not, and all that. So I choose a few there, and I've got additional ones. Notice here, I can remediate non-compliant settings. So if a device falls out of compliance, I can move it back in. So again, enforce a PIN or something like that. And then we can deploy this to a specific collection of devices. So you noticed I also showed some mobile devices there. We'll talk a little bit about that, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time on mobile devices. We'll be doing another session on mobile device management in the future. So I had questions about reporting. Configuration Manager comes with over 500 canned reports, and as Microsoft is very good at doing, they don't reinvent the wheel. Microsoft has a rich BI environment based on Power BI and SQL Server Reporting Services. So SQL Server Reporting Services is part of that, and we have dashboards and subscriptions and all the wonderful things that come along with that. So I'll give you an example of a compliance report. This is a compliance report from a patch distribution that I talked about previously, but if I go back into my console, I'll let you have a quick peek at the hundreds and hundreds of reports that are available. And I've got it this way. I know it's difficult to navigate this way, but I wanted to see how many there are, and there really are a lot. I could also go through it this way where they're a little bit more manageable. Let me run a quick report for you here so you can see what it looks like. I should be able to run that one. And this can be done as a subscription so people get it on a regular basis. Yes, Mitch says there's 541 reports by default, but that changes every few months as more get integrated into it. So there's an example of all the different memory configurations I have and how many machines have it. Notice this 8 gigs, I've got 3 machines. If I drill in, it shows me which 3 machines those are. My Exchange server, my Orchestrator server, and my Virtual Machine Manager server each have 8 gigs. So that's just one example of the hundreds of reports. Now, we did talk a little bit about in-console updates. So if I take a look here, this is where Microsoft tells me, look, there is a new version of Configuration Manager available to me, and I can install it, and I get new reports and new abilities to deal with the new versions of Windows that are coming out. One of the items that a lot of organizations forget about is that they get an endpoint protection license with Configuration Manager. So I'm not going to suggest that endpoint protection is the best anti-malware product for your organization. That's something you'll have to evaluate for yourself. But since you've got the license already, and if you're setting up an anti-malware infrastructure, you're typically setting up a console, you're typically setting up agents on devices, and you're typically setting up a way of pushing updates to those devices. Sounds a lot like what we've been doing with Configuration Manager all along. So what you're doing is you're putting together a parallel infrastructure. You don't get unified reporting. And what I mean by that is if you care about the security posture of your organization or a device, it's great to know that it's patch current, but you also want to know that it's anti-malware current. And if you've got two different products doing each of those, it's very difficult to synthesize those two data sources. So Configuration Manager or WSUS can tell you that your patch current, and your anti-malware product will tell you where your signatures are current, but the unified view of which machines fall between the cracks is not really apparent. With Configuration Manager, if using endpoint protection, that is there, and we can look at that very quickly. Last of my demos, just show you where that is. So we have endpoint protection here that we can manage. One of my favorite items in that is definition updates. Where do users get their updates? So I can choose the order in which users grab their definition files. They can check Configuration Manager, WSUS, go to Microsoft. So if I've got a road warrior, someone who's out of the city a lot, never gets back to my main office, I still want him to get his definition updates, and he can get them directly from Microsoft. And again, I can apply different search order for different collections of machines. Just to wrap up, talk about mobile device management. We get asked about that a lot. We will be doing another session on mobile device management in the near future, but I just wanted to prime you for that. So mobile device management is devices that are not running an operating system like Windows or OS X or Unix. These are operating systems that have really grown up outside of enterprise management. So as you saw at the beginning of the session, Configuration Manager has been around in one form or another for well over 20 years. A lot of the basic problems like inventory, software distribution, operating system deployment have been solved for Windows and OS X and Unix and Linux. But they haven't for mobile devices, for smartphones, tablets, wearables, and things like that. So when we talk about MDM, we're not talking about the management of laptops and notebooks, because they're essentially portable Windows devices or portable Mac devices, and we just use the same mechanisms that we use to manage those today with Configuration Manager. We're talking about things like smartphones. And we can address some scenarios like corporate-owned, bring your own device, and choose your own device. So we're seeing data that well over 70% of organizations have some form of bring your own device. And that creates a very interesting management paradigm that you've got to work around. Let me give you a quick example of that. So here's the data from last year, and I'm sure the numbers have changed, but we're looking at here, 71 to 75% of organizations in the SMB space of BYOD. So what can we do with, what are the common challenges we have with mobile devices? Is asset management, what do I have, who's using it? Security, is there data on there that I need to protect? Are there applications on there that give people access to things that they shouldn't have if the device isn't in the right hands? So what am I going to do with that data? What about the personal data? What if it's a personal device and someone's got pictures of their kids or other personal information on that that they don't want me as the corporate sysadmin having access to or seeing? So I'm going to walk you through one scenario before I wrap up. So that's a personal versus corporate owned device. So what we have is the concept of corporate data and corporate apps that are managed, and personal data and personal apps which are not managed. And the use case scenario that opens up for us is that sandboxing or segregation of the corporate data and applications. And we'll, like I said, we'll be doing another session on that, but let me walk you through the scenario. User enrolls their device. They've got their personal apps and personal data, maybe their Gmail account or their Hotmail or Outlook.com account, their personal contacts, their personal calendar, things like that. They enroll the device, or the administrator enrolls it for them, and the corporate apps, corporate data are installed, and these are all centrally managed. Okay, and the user has that division between their personal and their corporate. Here's a couple of scenarios. Let's assume that the device is lost or stolen. Well, if it's lost or stolen, we want to wipe everything, right? Assuming the user wants us to wipe everything, because they may have some personal information on there that they don't want in the wrong hands as well. So we can wipe it if it's lost or stolen. The other scenario, though, is if it's a personal device and it's being retired, meaning either the employee is leaving the organization or the employee is getting a new device and maybe handing it down to a spouse or a child to become their device, we retire it, we just wipe the corporate apps and corporate data, and then they can hand that off to whomever they like. And we'll be doing a future session highlighting some of those capabilities. So just to recap, selective wipe removes just corporate applications and data. Full wipe removes everything. And we can keep sensitive data off the device if that's required as well. So that's our wrap up.